Thank you for joining us today for our Lunch with Lou and Andrew conference call. My name is Max Kuba, and I'm the system administrator at AltFest. Today, Lou and Andrew will be discussing the current challenges facing the market due to COVID-19. In just a moment, our CEO, Lou AltFest, and President, Andrew AltFest, will join us on the call. After Lou and Andrew's remarks, I will ask them a few selected questions that our clients have submitted. We expect today's call to last about 45 minutes. A recorded playback of this conference call will be available should you wish to listen again at a later time. Now it is my pleasure to introduce Lou AltFest and Andrew AltFest.
Hi, I'm going to start. I'm going to just ask how are you all doing? You're all hunkered down. Hopefully it's not too onerous. And besides, if things are getting boring, well, we're going to help you to not only amuse you, we're just going to inform you about what's going on. I want you to know that we prepared for this movement to our own homes, and all of the people at the firm are doing their jobs in the same way as they did before, and we're working extra hard. All of us in the leadership group were on the line on Saturday and Sunday, and I would say they were busier days than we have during the week. And so we're prepared. We had a cool conference call this morning on investments, and just to bring everything up to date. So I'm going to start with a discussion on the coronavirus. I don't consider myself an expert in this, but the questions that you're asking, first of all, there is a definite, when you hear this time it's different, it's different. It's not different, I should say. This time, when you say this time is different, it is different, because this is not a business matter that created this decline in the market and the problems with the economy. It's a medical problem. It's highly unusual. And the question about how long will it last, that's another question that's difficult to really discuss. But I would say, if we use the Spanish precedent, that may be 15 months from the beginning. So sometime at the outset, the widest item of material difficulty might be something like next May, June. But I don't think it's going to last that long, and the markets anticipate things happening well before that. And we have the potential here, which I think is a real potential, of being able to lessen the impact of this over time, or developing a vaccine, which would have immediate salutary effects on markets, even if the vaccine would take some time to work its way through the system. I do want to say something about that we're going through, as many of you know, a trade-off between the economy and the health of citizens. And I think it's going to be resolved by a combination of discussion of about and actions for people as to their health and the health of the economy. More specifically, there will be continued stress on seniors to stay locked up, and then young and already exposed to go back to work before not too long. the economy. Let's talk a little bit about the economy. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about the investments. We're going to talk about your questions that you wanted to, and then I'm going to answer, end with a something a little different. The economy short term, there have been highly visible layoffs, and there's layoffs this morning of many of the people who work for Macy's. And that's going to be the most, having the greatest impact over the short term. You're going to see millions of people out of work. Maybe the something like 15 to 20% decline in GDP for a quarter or two, and that layoffs could conceivably be greater. And of course, there will be a rebound, and it won't take as long as the 2008-9 recession to get back to reasonable employment levels, With the way our system works, industrial production will not be as affected, I believe, once we start getting people back to work, and won't be hit as much as it would have been in previous recessions, because we've moved to a service economy. So you're going to get many of the goods that you are looking for will continue to be available. And people will start to go back to work. Here's a Fearless forecast. Sometime later in the second quarter or into the third quarter. Now, you may be thinking about what that's going to do for corporate profits and its impact on the stock market. I know that the professionals have forgotten about this year. And there's something that happens that you may not be aware of, that when you have a year in which profits are not going to be good, then all the companies, or not all, many companies take that occasion to write off all of the stuff that's gone wrong, and they overwrite off, and meaning more than is really accurate. So you could have a really bad profit figure for this year. But the professionals know that this year doesn't count for the market. Forget this year. This year is a write-off year. Now, people may get nervous about the figures as they see them, but that's really not what counts. Professionals are looking beyond the current year. As far as the economy is likely to trough out, that means reach its low and start to turn up very close to year end or into the beginning of the first quarter next year. So this isn't going to go on forever. And it's going to take some time to get back to the level of production the economy, it's going to take some time. It's not going to be a V-shaped recovery, but it probably, as I've mentioned, will take less time than in 2008, which took many years. The economy longer term, and this is beyond the next year or two, but I think it's worth talking about. As a country, this concentration of debt is going to help us get through this problem. But there is a cost. We're spending a lot of money. And down the road, two things are going to happen. Maybe both. one or the other, or probably both, we're going to have a tax increase to cover this. We can't run at the deficits that we're running. We can run them for a time, but it's not healthy for the country to continue with this. So I'm not concerned. I'm not talking about now. No tax increase now. I'm talking about is going across and at that point, we might have a value-added tax as a country, particularly if the Democrats get in. The second figure is inflation. Inflation will not be a problem now because we're not operating at certainly not at full employment. But over time, inflation is going to be reintroduced. If nothing else is done, then and given the amount of deficits, we're going to have inflation years from now. But importantly, it's an important factor. Let's see. I want to go over with you the psychological factors. We, as a country, as you know, started out in panic mode, it being a having an what seemed to be to some an unlimited loss potential. Now, and actions have reduced that fear, actions by the government. And it certainly has helped that we've had hand-holding by Cuomo, whose ratings have moved up from 40s to the 70s, and to some extent the president, but also fundamentally by Washington actions. The first action is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has had unprecedented actions taken. The last time around, they liberalized some, last time being the 2008 recession. Now, and they had some problems. Between you and I, which isn't generally known, there were fears at one point in which there were lines around the block of banks that were never reported. And then the Federal Reserve eased people's minds. Now they have created liquidity. And I'm going to tell you a little story. When I was working for a firm on Wall Street, I was a partner of that firm. That was over 35 years ago. I interviewed different firms for we were a large firm and we wanted to know how much money they would put up for liquidating our stocks if we wanted to liquidate a stock. And we had we had Goldman in, we had Merrill Lynch in, we had all the firms, and they all had limits, say 100 million as being a limit. And then we had Salomon Brothers, which at the time was as prestigious as Goldman Sachs. And the fellow came in, who was the head of trading, and I said, how much money would you put up if we needed capital to get out of a position? And he looked me in the eye and he said, an unlimited amount. Those were his words, an unlimited amount. And that made me almost gasp. This guy was going to put up whatever it takes. And that's what it reminds me right now. The Federal Reserve reminds me of that. By its display of confidence and saying, we will do whatever it takes to keep our economy going. And they're doing it. They're not only in their traditional habits. They put money into municipal bonds to keep that place afloat and rallied, and they put money in corporate bonds that we were warning about there being a difficulty. And so they're there, whatever it takes, whatever jam ups there are, they're there. The second thing is the government. And the government has been giving aid to people in what is called helicopter money. I love that term, helicopter money. It means that if you didn't get it before, that the administration is taking money, bales of money, and going around in a helicopter and opening up the bottom chute and giving people dollars. Isn't that what they're doing? They're giving aid to people. The goal for the government, as is appropriate at this time, is to keep the economy going, as people are not going to be able to spend or don't want to spend at the level that they had been. And they're giving money to small businesses, and maybe even later we'll see some infrastructure spending. But the guy who did the helicopter money likes the Fed, Bernanke, who was the head of the Fed at the time, and he was the one that was given the term helicopter Ben. So I can say fearlessly, there's more helicopter money to come, as what is needed. So with that, I'm kind of finished my remarks, and I'll turn the microphone over to Andrew.
Thanks, Lou. It's great to be here with everyone today, with a seat at the table for lunch with Lou and Andrew. So I'm going to give you my thoughts about, I'm going to first tell you about where we have been positioning portfolios and where we've moved the portfolios in the last few weeks. It's been a very active time for us, and it's going to continue what Lou is saying about our overall views of the economy and the support that has been put into place by the Fed and fiscally as well. So we've been in a risk-off mode with portfolios since the middle of last year. What happened was the markets moved up sharply last year, and there wasn't a similar improvement in companies' financial performance. So you just had higher valuations. It was a contrarian view, and it's certainly helped out significantly through this sharp downturn. We saw that there was uncertainty that wasn't being priced into the markets. The markets were just serene. There was minimal volatility. Prices had moved up. We had weakening global growth, and we had a slump in manufacturing in the U.S. And we also had some uncertainty through the presidential elections that are coming up, and debt had been increasing overall. So we didn't feel that the risks were being accurately reflected into share prices, which had just been on a upward tear. So what we did was we made portfolios more defensive. We created a category, or expanded a category, called alternatives, where we put in investments that are more defensive, can behave differently when stocks and bonds sell off. And so we increased that position, that category, and which namely by increasing what are called hedged positions. So investments that use options to protect against the downside. We had ETF investments that reflected all parts of the stock market, U.S. stocks, international stocks, developing market stocks. And we also had a position called tail, which actually profits when the market declines. So in other words, it shorts the market, it shorts stocks, and it owns very long-term treasury bonds, and just behaves inversely with the stock market. We also added in that category infrastructure investments, utilities, toll road operators, railroads that are generate income, more income oriented, and whose cash flows are more defensive. Last year, we also sold out of our or many of our cyclical positions, industrial companies, banks, and prefer to have companies that had more stable cash flows. The bonds in the portfolio were also heavily weighted to government bonds and high quality tax-free municipal bonds, and we were avoiding corporate debt. Where we were more offensive was in Asia. And you might not think this right away, but Asia has actually been an outperforming stock market this year. They have benefited from a significant reduction in oil prices and perhaps also being quicker to contain the virus and get that seemingly under control. So as we went into last year, went from last year to this year, the going into the decline, our portfolio positioning has significantly helped us reduce losses and also become more opportunistic buyers at this time. So where we are today, we have allocated. We've reduced our defensive positioning. We're still defensively positioned, but we have significantly reduced it and taken advantage of what we the value opportunities that we have seen in the market. And so everyone here knows that we are value oriented, and when there's a deal, we take advantage. Overall, things are not being given away for free though right now. So the stock market was high coming into this year. And when it sold off, it went back to more reasonable levels. And there were some parts of the market that really got hammered that are pricing in very terrible scenarios, and which we don't think are going to last forever, and so they're pricing in depressions that will last far into the future, and whose businesses are now trading at reasonable levels, and in many cases paying significant dividend yields, and who have stable balance sheets and could get through a period of significant economic contraction. So we were able to allocate over the last few weeks and say hello to some friends that we had said goodbye to. So we bought back holdings that we had eliminated or that we had reduced, and because they were no longer attractive to us in the last year or in the prior period. So we took a position, we added to our position in Oakmark International. Oakmark International invests in Europe and in Japan. And that part, their particular style of investing, which is value, had sold off significantly, and they were buying or they own stocks in European banks and auto companies that are selling at prices in some cases below where they were selling during the financial crisis. So we're talking about companies with 4 to 5 times earnings, 9 to 10% dividend yields. So we believe that their portfolio today is very attractively priced. And so we added to the position that we have with Oakmark International. We also took a position through an ETF and through the stock portfolio that we managed directly with select energy companies. So we have an ETF that gives us exposure to companies like Exxon and Royal Dutch. And what happened with in the energy sector is commodity prices are at multi-year lows. So Russia and Saudi Arabia are in a standoff right now. OPEC suggested that Russia reduce the amount of supply that they have, and due to weaker demand as a result of the recession that we're in. Instead, Russia increased production. Saudi Arabia responded by increasing production as well. I think some of this is targeted at U.S. shale. We're now net exporters of oil in the U.S. And so we have had prices come down significantly. However, we don't think that prices are going to stay here forever. It's in no one's best interest. And we have had energy companies fall drastically in price. And we think that there could be some more bankruptcies. There could be bankruptcies going forward with highly indebted companies. And however, we see companies that are very attractively priced now and with strong balance sheets that could weather the storm. And oil prices today are well below the cost of production for many. And so we strongly believe that energy prices are going to go up from here. We also took a position in a new fund called MFS New Discovery, which owns smaller U.S. value companies. It gives us some additional cyclical exposure to industrials and banks. As I had mentioned before, we had sold out of our cyclical positions, and this is, gives us a way through the sharp decline in the markets. This gave us a way to increase that exposure. We also bought, added to our technology fund, sold a hedged position, an example of what I had mentioned earlier. That limits the downside, and we use the proceeds to buy to add to our position in Allianz technology fund. On the alternative side, it's been active period for us in terms of reallocating our hedged positions, the positions that protect on the downside. Those are not things that you want to own statically. For example, when the market declines, you could stop getting protection by owning a hedge position. So you want to roll the hedges and opportunistically reallocate the hedges. We recently purchased a position called Ugil, which protects against the downside while giving us a 17% upside until the end of June. So that's a very attractive proposition for us. We can significantly manage downside risk while getting a lot of the upside. And so we've added Ugil. We also added to our infrastructure part of the portfolio. We added a infrastructure fund. And infrastructure is attractive to us now because we think that it will be a targeted area for government stimulus. We need upgrades throughout our country, and it sports a very attractive dividend yields, and it's much more defensive than the traditional stocks. On the bond side, we've also been very active. We've added to tax-free bonds. Tax-free bonds became very, very attractive and are still very attractive today. They have rallied since the Fed announced that it was going to be buying tax-free bonds as well as corporate bonds. So they have rallied, but they remain attractive. And we had purchased a fund called BlackRock Beauty. And we also took a position or added to our position in PIMCO Real Return. PIMCO, that's inflation protected bonds. As Lou mentioned before, we believe that we could see inflation come back as a result of all of the borrowing that we have that we're undertaking right now. And meanwhile, inflation is projected through the bond market to be only 1% per year over the next 10 years. So we feel that inflation protected bonds whose principal goes up as inflation goes up allows us to protect against one of the ways that we can protect against the higher inflation environment and just the general lack of expectation right now in the market that we're going to have any meaningful inflation going forward over a long period of time. We're currently analyzing and evaluating several other parts of the market to make changes. One of those changes is to buy back an emerging markets fund that we had owned previously and had gotten out of. Brazil, for example, is down 50%. The Brazil stock market is down 50%. We believe that developing markets have become much more attractively priced. We're also looking at adding back non-agency mortgages. So these are bonds that are tied to the mortgage market. And for those longtime clients, you'll know that we've been investing in those bonds since the financial crisis, and when they became very, very attractive, and hedge funds were forced to sell them. And we had added to our position in that part of the market over the years. But had a couple years ago, we sold out of that position when the bonds became less attractively priced. And the non-agency mortgages today are down sharply, and we feel that they represent value. So we're going to re-enter non-agency mortgages. We're also taking a close look at the TIAA CREF real estate account. So publicly traded real estate companies are down sharply, and some of them have become attractively priced. However, TIAA CREF real estate is not down this year. And so even though office properties, go ahead.
I would say, Andrew, you get that's enough to tell them about that particular asset, okay?
We'll hold that for now. We're also going to be introducing a dividend stock portfolio. And so we have we've managed a dividend stock portfolio a few accounts for a while now, and dividend stocks are now yielding 4.5%. So dividend stocks are very attractive today, particularly compared to a very low 10-year treasury bond. And so you can get very high quality companies, Merck, Gilead, Cisco, can get them with very attractive yields. Merck was, last time I checked, was yielding 3.5%. Gilead 5.4%. You have value-oriented stocks like Simon Properties yielding 15%. You have energy stocks, Exxon, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, all with very, very attractive dividend yields. So it's one way of capitalizing on today's environment. And then you can look at the income, get more comfort around the income that you're collecting from these stocks, and if that gives you more comfort, knowing that you're getting income and could pay a little less attention to the fluctuations in the stock prices. The stock prices are attractive for these companies. So it's been a very busy few weeks. We prepared for a bear market that significantly helped in terms of reducing losses in portfolios. And we're looking forward to continuing to be very active going forward. And there's a lot that we're looking at. If the stock market becomes cheaper from here, we would anticipate picking up even more attractively priced stocks.
Thank you, Lou and Andrew. Now we'll address a few questions that our listeners sent in. Our first question: the enormous state programs that we are seeing worldwide to help the economy, especially in the U.S. and EU, will leave numerous states with debt rates much higher than anything we experienced in the past. Based on that, do you see a risk for a new financial crisis? And if so, how should investors respond to it?
All right, so I'll take that. Worldwide deficits create second crisis is in theory a possibility, but it's not going to happen, because even though we're not as the leader in the same way as we were before, we're still the countries around the world are going to get together and make sure that we don't have that second crisis. And the deficits that are developed, I've told you, will down the road, many years down the road, will cause tax increases and inflationary effects. And since we're running a little bit later, I'm going to take the two other questions, the two other questions by the same person, and indicate what industries are we taking into account. The coronavirus, we talked about that, the pharmaceutical industry and the small, and also the fact that small cap companies, smaller companies, people are concerned about. But as Andrew said, we're not with the prices that they're selling at, where relative to large, we're more interested to some extent, at least having a position in smaller, increasing a position in smaller caps. Overall bond strategy, I think Andrew went through that question in great detail, so I don't think we have to do that. Repeat that question.
When you say a good time to invest now, please distinguish between your clients' age groups, i.e. including your clients who are in the eldest group, and our short-term investors.
Yeah, Andrew? I'll take that question. So this is, we're not making projections in terms of when we think stocks are going to come back 15, 20 years into the future. As Lou said, we think that economic activity will improve by the end of the year. And the stock market picks up, anticipates improvements before the real economy. I want to just give you some we're all students of the market. I'm going to give you some facts about the market and how the market has behaved over time. So over a five-year period since 1926 going to through 2017, a five-year period, the market's had 14% of the time has returned, has been negative. Over a 15-year period, there's never been a negative 15-year period since 1926. That's just statistically speaking. And we are, so hopefully I'll give you some comfort. We're not thinking about things over an extremely long time horizon as far as when you can see a turn up in stocks in your portfolio.
What strategies do we have for retired clients? That's pretty close to the previous question. I think that was gone over. We can skip that question. Do you agree, Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah, we have some additional thoughts. If you need to take money out of your portfolio today for income, we have some thoughts about how you can best do that in today's markets. So feel free to contact the advisor that you work with, and I would say that's there are strategies we use to best to make sure that we're you're most effectively taking money out of your portfolio if you need to do that to cover living expenses right now. So I'll just add that. But yeah, I think we can move on to the next question.
Okay. What are you doing to have cloud and cybersecurity companies in our portfolio?
Those are priced pretty egregiously. So we don't have a real exposure. Material exposure, although a sharp decline in their stock prices could change that approach.
Our next question. Can Lou discuss the potential impact on the real estate market in NYC and other areas?
The real estate market has already declined. We have clients that have asked us, should we continue to sell? Should we offer our price for sale now, or should we wait? The impact on prices are already down and are likely to go down more if we have an extended period of weak results.
And our final question. I see that many of the purchases during the downturn have been in funds or ETFs that have limits on the losses and gains to limit losses in a volatile market. In the light of the incompetent federal response, the ephemeral positive impact from the stimulus/bailout, and the likelihood that we are going to be shut down for a longer time, isn't it likely that the market is going to drop down much further? I understand that these capped funds keep us in the market so that we can enjoy the upside that is likely to occur at some point. But where further, much deeper drops are likely in the market, why wouldn't it make more sense to keep a sizable position in cash that can be used when the worst of the downturn is over?
Okay. That's a tough question because markets could always go down. And when do we turn on the spigot? In effect, we're saying that if markets go down sizably from here, we're going to start to, we're already making changes. We're going to be making more changes, but adding heavily is not going to be done at one point in time. It's going to be done gradually. We're going to be conservative, but at the same time looking to benefit on the upside. And this hedge vehicle has allowed us to be more aggressive in the portfolio. The old days of bonds having great yields to cushion you are obviously not here today. So it has also opened us up to be making some changes, some trades. One trade that we did, we just discussed this morning, in 3 days, we made 10% on the capital we put in. So we kind of like that approach, although we have some cash, I might say. We have raised some cash to be employed when we think it's appropriate. As was said, that's the last question. But before we go, I want to go over something with you. It won't take too long. I want you to know, and if you don't know it, that we're in a kind of a war. And so the parallels between that people use between 2008 and now, or 2001 and the World Trade Center situation are not as good a parallel as the war, World War II, a great surprise, not knowing how that's going to end. Were we going to win? Kind of open-ended, just like now. The enemy was, at that point, was, you know who the enemies were. Now the enemy is the coronavirus. And what I did was I had my assistant Kitty look at the figures for the stock market during this period. From the time of Pearl Harbor to the bottom. The bottom was not a sharp drop. It was a slow drop down. And guess what? The trough the bottom was down only 30%. Actually, that's been our bottom to date, 30% down. I'm not saying that there's an exact parallel in the stock markets and their valuation levels, but it's interesting that it's down 30%. And we recovered in the first quarter, all of that by the first quarter of 1943. And by between the second and third quarter, we were up 10% from the peak. So it doesn't seem that there was such a panic at the time, but it had to be as anxiety producing as this virus. All right, I want to just mention two other things. First is, don't look at the market. Look at your portfolio. All of you look at the markets and you see the markets down 30%. Do you know that at its trough was down 30? Unless you've had a concentration in equities, particularly all equities, particularly with three or four companies or even less having large concentration, you should be down. That's a very few companies, very few clients. You should be down a lot less than the market. And even that figure that I said, look at your own portfolio's progress. Don't look at the market. Even that figure, don't look at that figure too often. And finally, I want to say, don't be afraid to call your advisor for information. Especially if you don't realize that you have benefited relative to others from the time of this crisis to date. Your advisors, that's what they're there for. Besides, he or she is stuck in his house. What else do you want them to do? They'd like to hear from you. And so call them. I'm finished.
Thank you, Lou.
Sermon.
And thank you, Andrew.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Stay healthy.
And thanks to everyone for listening in and sending us your questions. In case you joined today's call late, or if you would like to pass Lou and Andrew's remarks along to a friend, we will be posting a replay of the call on our website, and we'll send you an email once this replay is available. And of course, if you have more personal questions, please contact one of the members of your wealth management team or call our office directly at 212-406-0850. Once again, thank you for joining Lunch with Lou and Andrew. Have a nice day and stay healthy.